On today's episode, Liz and I have a great conversation with Taylor and Megan Kovar, otherwise known as the Money Couple. We dive into the importance of finances and financial infidelity and discuss their money personality assessment. We also talk about the great resources they offer and how you can achieve financial freedom at last. Known as the Money Couple, Taylor and Megan Kovar provide all kinds of resources to help individuals and couples manage their money. They consider themselves middle school sweethearts and have countless life lessons to share. Taylor is a certified financial planner, while Megan works as a full-time mom with their three cute kids. Together, they manage courses, blogs, and a podcast on their themoneycouple.com website. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. The doctors are in. I'm Dr. Liz Hale, clinical psychologist, along with Dr. Dave Schramm, my friend and the professor. We are dedicating our life's work to bringing you the best we have in valid marital research, along with a few tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. Our guests today are the Money Couple. How would you like to be known as the Money Couple? Yeah. Taylor and Megan Kovar, they were high school sweethearts who have been navigating life ever since high school. They've been growing up together as well as now growing up a beautiful family for nearly two decades. They are passionate about sharing resources about marriage and financial advice to couples in hopes of providing them with enough knowledge and tools that divorce is not an option. You're a couple after our own hearts, dear Taylor and Megan. Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection.
Thank you. Yes, excited thank to be here. You.
Oh, and we love your accent. We love you and the generous, you know, people that you are and really wanting to make a difference for couples. As you know, Dave and I know anyway, money is one of those top five causes of the demise of marriage. Is that part of what motivated you to take over for this other darling couple that used to have, did they used to be the money couple?
Yeah. So I've been in the financial world for ever since college. I learned at a young age, my parents didn't have any money. They were paycheck to paycheck, blue collar people. I started dating Megan in high school, and her parents had a few small businesses, not wealthy by any means, but they had some financial means and knowledge. And so when I was getting ready to try to pop the question and convince her to marry me, she was like, hey, so there's this big glaring red flag, and that is you keep asking me for rent money. And so I was like, yeah, I don't know any other way to live, right? This is what I know. And so started studying finance. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, what's wrong with this? Your money's my money now.
I had no problem with that. I had a bit of a problem with that.
And so I jumped in and started learning everything I could about money, worked my way through college with a finance degree, and then eventually launched my own investment firm. And that's where I met the previous money couple, Scott and Bethany Palmer, who are just amazing people. And they're the ones that actually kicked this thing off, learned the five money personalities, figured those out, worked with the statisticians to create some of these initial resources. And we built a great relationship, and they asked us to carry the torch forward a couple of years ago, and we've been doing that ever since.
Yes, we were honored to take that from them.
That's great. Well, you're doing a beautiful job following in their footsteps with your own flair.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love it, man. We're so excited to have you two on here. It's fun. You said high school sweethearts. My wife and I were actually high school sweethearts as well. And so there's something about that connection, kind of that young connection and growing together. Yes. One of the things, though, I love about you guys is you're so refreshingly candid, I guess, about like so many couples going through some pretty rough spots in marriage, even nearly calling it quits by the second anniversary. Yet, despite the challenges, you guys have equipped yourselves to be better and to fight for your marriage and for your future. So what were you facing around year two, and how did you forge a new path forward?
Take it.
You take it. I want to see where you go with it. What your take was.
Yeah. So we had high school sweethearts. We've been dating since we were 14. So in theory, we raised each other. And that's what we tell each other. We basically raised each other.
Yes. I don't remember a time that I did not know him.
Wow. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, if we were babies, you know, when we met, basically. And so, you know, we got married and we thought life should be perfect, right? We knew everything about each other. You know, we were our first loves and all this great stuff. And then life happens and you move in together and you start thinking, oh, I didn't know that about you. And I didn't know that about you. And before we knew it, the way I was spending money and the way that she was spending money and the way that we were thinking about the future and the way that we were really just looking at life in general made us really pause and say, is maybe this wasn't the best idea, right? Maybe before kids get involved, before we, you know, we move down this road, maybe we should take a step back and reevaluate. And that was a lot of trying times, during that period. And, you know, a lot of people say those first year or two of marriage are the toughest. Our first year was really great. Our second year, it just seemed like it all imploded. That's when real life really started to hit. And we decided then that, hey, we've got too much invested in this, right? We're already in this together 7-8 years. Do we want to throw it away just because we don't know how to communicate, because we don't know how to really love each other the way that we feel like, God made us to love each other? And that's whenever we went down the road of, actually investing in our marriage. So we went to a marriage conference. We started reading marriage books. We went to therapy and said, hey, like we've invested in college. We've invested in, you know, education. Maybe it's time we do that in our marriage as well.
Hmm. I agree.
And you agree even better. We have the same vision of how it went and how it's going. You have another impressive vision about never giving divorce an option, Megan and Taylor. And you believe that most marriages can be traced back to, and we would agree, lack of commitment, extensive arguments, unrealistic expectations, lack of marital preparation, and physical and financial infidelity. Let's talk about the latter. What are some examples of financial infidelity, please?
Well, you know, I think a lot of that, now I'm going to jump in. Meg's very much more the marriage side of our
the marriage, the family, the and marriage. Taylor is definitely the financial background. So he'll handle more of the financial questions.
Yeah. So we see a lot of financial infidelity where couples are hiding money. And we see this a lot in young couples, especially if they were on their own beforehand, where, hey, this is my money, right? Like I made this money. This isn't your money. They don't know how to really share. And that's hard to say, but they don't know how to be a team. And so we see where maybe one spouse is making more than the other. And so they want to enjoy it more, right? Well, I made it. I made this money. Or the other spouse feels that, you know, they make less, but, you know, they're not getting an equal share at the marriage. And so they feel like maybe they need to hide money, or they need to, you know, find a way to pull money over here or take on more debt. And we see that a lot where hidden credit cards come into play. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that financial infidelity, when it is exposed, can really hurt. It can hurt just as much as a physical infidelity can. And so kind of getting it out there that, hey, you think you have this little mad money account, but there's a lot more to it than just having a few extra dollars sitting under the mattress.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
Ouch.
And Taylor and Megan, you believe that no matter where a couple is now, right, whether they're out dancing in the daisies or they're pushing a boulder up the mountain together, they're really struggling, you really believe that they can achieve financial freedom. So what does financial freedom look like exactly?
Financial freedom for us was definitely not living paycheck to paycheck, which is the way that Taylor grew up. It wasn't the way that I grew up, but with my parents owning small businesses, you know, sometimes more money was coming in than other times. It wasn't a steady income. So for us, it was definitely being able to have that freedom to breathe week in and week out. We weren't just waiting on the next paycheck. And if that paycheck was maybe less than we thought it should be, you know, really struggling to catch up from there.
Yeah. And so, you know, for us, I think a lot of people hear financial freedom, they think, oh, millionaire, mm-hmm. right? Like that's just what you hear. You're like, oh, millionaire, you got life by the tail, you know, oh, you're retired at 20. Like, no, for us, financial freedom it's not really a burden on you anymore. You know, it allows you to really go out and pursue your true calling, your true passions without being constrained by debt, constrained by finances. I grew up in a house where my parents lived on overtime, and if the meal cut those hours, you know, it really hurt. And so we really made it a priority in our home, and we try to help others. So, hey, look, there's a whole lot of freedom out there if you can get your finances under control. And it's maybe not as hard as everybody thinks. It's work, right? It is definitely work, and it takes some education, but I think no matter what your income level, you can achieve some of that peace that comes with financial freedom.
I would agree. Did you have kind of a starting place for that, Megan and Taylor? Just curious. Do you start with savings? Do you start with paying off bills? Where does a couple start?
For us, this is a story I tell pretty routinely, but for us, it started, I was on a business trip to California and I was walking down Venice Beach. And if you've ever been there, there's just people everywhere and some are unhoused, right? Or unhomed people. And they're living on the beach. And I came home and I told Megan, I was like, hey, listen, like, I want to retire the beach one day. These guys are already doing it. And she was like, yeah, but you probably want a house, right? You probably want a house on the beach, right? And I was like, yeah, you're right. And so for us, it was really sitting down from the very first step and saying, why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we working? And that's one of the first questions I ask the clients of our investment firm is really, why are you doing this? You know, why are you going for more college, or why are you putting in 60 hours a week? Why are you growing this business? Why are you working? So I think if you can start with your why, that makes everything else easier. And then you can go back and say, okay, we need to maybe cut back on some monthly expenses to be able to get there, or maybe we just add more into savings. It really helps to kind of allocate those funds better once you know the purpose of it. It's a lot easier to tell somebody, hey, you need to cancel your Netflix, when they know, okay, well, that $20 a month really helps toward this goal. And so for us, that's kind of where I tell everybody start with your why. Why are you doing what you're doing?
Your why, your purpose, what are you saying yes to? So that the no's become a little more easier to say, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I really like that. We really love your money personality assessment located on your website. It's just a free assessment. Can't get better than that. And it's just chock full of great information. What's interesting to us is that the five money personalities are not just about how we perceive money, but it's also how we view life, you say.
It is.
Would you say, Megan and Taylor, that the best starting point is this assessment for couples?
Yes, definitely. I think that you need to know so many things about yourself, but one of the things you need to know about yourself is your money personality, because you just don't realize how that affects so many different aspects of your personality as a whole.
Yeah, it really jumped out to us. I was looking for some tools and resources using our investment firm. I was creating financial plans for couples, and it just felt like no matter what we were doing, that you couldn't make both of them happy, you know, like, or there had to be something else we could tie into. And that's how I came across the five money personalities and Scott and Bethany Palmer a few years ago. And whenever I took the assessment the first time and I started kind of reading, I was like, I've never had anybody speak to me like that. But they read my mail, right? And they didn't know who I was. And I had Megan take it. And from there forward, we've had tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of other people take it. And it's just a light that kind of tells you, oh, hang on, maybe this is why I think this way, and how I can better communicate with my spouse, no matter what your money personalities are.
So the five personalities, excuse me, Megan, go ahead.
Well, it's so eye-opening because so many people think that the way that they view money is the correct way to view money.
Of course.
And even in our relationship, opposites definitely attract, and our personalities are very opposite, but our money personalities are very opposite as well. And I definitely went into it thinking, oh, well, yes, his degree and his background is in finance, but I know more than he does about finance. My way of thinking is definitely the correct way, because I'm thinking you need to save every penny, you need to allocate, you need to just know, you just have to have everything down to the penny. And that was not how he viewed money. So the money personalities let us know that, you know, it is a very detailed part of how you feel about money, but it's not right or wrong.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
So you're a saver. Is that right, Megan? And you're the spender.
Yeah. Taylor? So Megan is a saver, security seeker. So there's five money personalities. There's saver, security seeker, spender, risk taker, and flyer. And you have a portion of all of these within you, but we really focus on those primary and secondary money personalities. And we say the primary one is the one that makes most of the decisions. That's who you usually are 99%, 90% of the time. And then the secondary one is kind of that backseat driver. When you're under stress, it's been a hard week at work, that one tends to take over. And so, you know, we see savers who, you know, they'll go on a spending spree one weekend and we can tie it back to, well, you know, you're also a spender in a way because you have this. And so Megan, in our relationship, she's a saver, security seeker. I am a spender, risk taker, which means I don't have any problem spending money, and I don't have a problem, I'm not gonna say gambling the money, but you know, taking a risk on, yes, on businesses and different things. Whereas Megan is a saver, means she likes to see those dollars. She likes to see where they're at. But from a security seeker, if she's buying something, it's usually a value. She's one that if you complimented her shirt, she can probably tell you how much she paid for it, where she got it, when she got it, and that you need to go get it as well.
Yeah. And I can assure you it was on sale.
Yeah. And I can't tell you where half my clothes come from. I have no idea. she has a saying that she can get just as full at the McDonald's dollar menu as she can at the steakhouse. And that's how she thinks about money. Yeah. Whereas me, I want the steakhouse experience. You know, I want the experience. I want to go sit down and enjoy it. And so it's funny how those money personalities really come to life throughout a lot of
different avenues. Day-to-day
living.
Yeah, I get it. So Dave, it's interesting because Taylor and I are the same. We're both spender risk takers.
Yeah.
And you know what that really means? It really means no list and no limits.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. That's right. Yes.
Yes. Oh, you boy. Never want to send Taylor to the grocery store.
Oh boy. It makes my husband so nervous.
And I mean, I just stick to that list and I'm within $10 of that budget. And there is no budget when Taylor goes to the grocery store.
Funny. Yeah, my husband will say, "How much was that?" It's like, I don't know.
I don't know. I just
Don't worry about it.
That's right. Now you're coming along.
Wait a minute.
My husband.
I took it as well as, and I'm more of a, like, kind of like me, you know, I'm a more of a saver. Don't like to take a whole lot of risks. I wonder though, let me ask you this. If some of this comes from maybe how we were raised, you know, the family or the circumstances, each family kind of has a story. And I feel like that I don't know if I inherited that, but I saw how money was spent and how important it was. So it wasn't necessarily about money. It was about what money meant. You know, for me, it meant security. It meant safety, you know, and investing and not taking all these risks and not getting into credit card debt. So tell me your thoughts a little bit about kind of where we get these money personalities.
Yeah. We say you're born with them, and they're part of your family of origin. And so that's something we discuss quite a bit is, you know, whereas like the five love languages, I can take it today and a month from now, I may have different, you know, my love language may be a little different then, but the way we think and feel about money doesn't change. We may learn, right? We may can learn to see the other side and learn to appreciate those differences, but ultimately that is who we are. We see this play out even in children. And so we have three kids and they are very, very different with their money personalities. And so you can see this even with like Halloween candy is a great example. We have one that'll come in and they'll sort it out and they're going to know what they like the most and they're going to make a plan for it. And we have the other one who's just going to eat everything they can get. And by the time we get home, their candy bag is mainly wrappers. It's not candy. You know, and so we kind of see these personalities and how we think about the value of things come out at a very early age. And most time we just think, oh, well, that's just their personality. That's how they are. Oh, there's a hole in his pocket. He has to spend it. But there's a lot more to it that that comes in behind the scenes.
I can only imagine. And what do you do about that? So since are many couples, the opposites attract, like you were saying, Megan, is that true? Like I'm a spender. My husband's a saver. Dave might be more of a saver. He might feel his wife is more of a spender. So how what do we do with that? Is all lost?
No,
it's not all lost. It's not. So, you know, we believe there's hope, for any relationship and opposites attract for a reason. You know, there are times and, I'll say this, we balance each other out. You know, the things that she, with her saver security personality and me with my spender risk taker, we can both appreciate those differences. And a lot of times couples, the arguments occur when they don't appreciate the differences that they fell in love with. You know, you fell in love with that person. There's a reason that you like them. And it's usually because it's something different from what you are. And so it's the same thing with your money. If we take that and instead from going, hey, I have it right. I'm the one that's correct with money, whether I have the degree or I grew up with more means. No, it doesn't mean one's right or one's wrong. It just means, hey, we need to learn how to appreciate and communicate where we can both get out of this what we really want.
I love the shortcut, Dave, to a Savers, the cheat sheet here is see money as a means to an end and not the end itself.
Yeah.
That's so well said.
Yeah.
Because it can feel so drastic. It can feel like the end of the world. Like, what are you doing? Right? We might look at our partner feeling that they are so out of control, either, you know, too stingy or too generous, too, you know, carefree. So you say, highlight the difference. I understand the differences and make them work for you. I love that.
You do. Yeah. And we can see this in a lot of different areas. You know, for us, a lot of it, we go back to eating out because everybody eats out. Most everybody eats out. And so we go on a lot of road trips. We travel a lot. And one of those things is when I'm on a road trip, I like to eat somewhere local. You know, I want to eat the hole in the wall. I don't care. I want that experience. You know, I'm a risk taker. I don't mind taking the risk of I may not like it. Whereas Megan's very much like, hey, let's swing through McDonald's. It's dependable. It's there. We've
got three kids. Yes.
Right. More reasonable. So
the risk taker has definitely caused us to end up in, you know, 5-star restaurants, $100 a plate meals with our three kids with us. And they're just wanting macaroni and cheese and chicken nuggets. But we enjoy the experiences sometimes, but he has also leaned more towards my taste many times. So we just try to balance each other out.
Well, good for you too. I love the idea of giving our children the money personality assessment. That's really interesting that it starts so young. It's fascinating.
Yeah, we actually have two different kids assessments. So one that goes from like age 5 to 10 or 11, and then one from like 12 to 18, because they just have different questions at that age. And then we have little, I want to say mascots, characters that go with each money personality and things to kind of help at those ages, depending on what money personality they are and how to best nurture that for, you know, their future. Whereas I'm a spender risk taker, my son is not, and I have to learn how to communicate with him. If I want a great relationship with my child, I have to learn how he thinks and values money and assets as well.
Yes, because he might approach that same way in being in sports, right? Sports or interactions. That's fascinating. Wow, this could really be an inroad. You're onto something.
Thank you. Yeah, you can do the same thing with the money personalities and money as well. As hey, some kids respond to. Yeah. A chore or that the money that comes from a chore, and others just they don't care about the money at all. It's just, you know, a means to an end. So
really fascinating. I remember, speaking of parenting, I remember my mother saying, as I'm a spender risk taker, I remember her saying one statement to me. She goes, Elizabeth, you're in for a rude awakening one day. And I never really knew what she meant, but I think she was talking about that. Right. Yes. Seeing me that I was pretty footloose and fancy free. No lists, no limits. Oh my goodness.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. My dad would always say, remember, you can only spend that dollar once. And I grew up and learned that if you invest the dollar, you can maybe spend it more than once, right? That's the goal of investing. That was his term as well.
That's very cool. You learned about investing early. Well, speaking of kiddos, you're not a fan of children being paid for typical chores. This comes up a lot in marriage therapy. Please say more about why you think it's important that children don't get paid for helping to keep up their own home, right? And where you think that getting paid is positive.
Yeah, I think you explained it perfectly there. They're helping taking care of their own home. So just like we make our beds in the morning and put away our laundry, we expect that our kids do the same. Of course, a 9-month-old isn't going to be able to, but they can handle those things a lot earlier than some people may think. I remember talking with a friend and we had kids the same age and they were about 3 years old. And she said, I think I'm going to start have them help around the house a little and help, you know, put the pillows on the bed and put some socks away and that type of stuff. And I'm just nodding and smiling. But in my mind, I was thinking they could have done that like literally a year and a half ago. Like you've wasted some time. You just, kids want to feel needed. They want to feel a part. And by letting them know that they are a part of the family, they also have responsibilities in the family. And I just, for us, it's been a good thing. Our kids have responded well to it. And it has made our home a lot more peaceful, and we just have our routines, and there's no unexpected things that arise during the day. They know that this is their routine. This is what needs to be done. And no, they don't get paid for it, but we do pay them when they go above and beyond.
And I think that's really the key is, you know, as an adult, we're raising future adults, you know, we're right. raising the next generation. And so I want them adequately prepared. Yes. And for me, that means, hey, if you're part of something, you pull your weight, you know, you're a valuable team member and not just kind of riding, you know, the clock or riding the coattails of someone else. And so in our home, even from a young age, hey, it's time to pick up. Everybody picks up, you know, and you clean up after yourself. And we teach them from early age how to do the dishes and how to do laundry and how to just be part. And so we also teach them, hey, if you're doing something that isn't really expected, if you're doing something that, you know, maybe we came in one day or one morning, I woke up and I'm a pretty early riser and my son was already up and he was in there putting the dishes in the dishwasher and it was like 5:30 a.m.
And he was like 9 years old.
Yeah. He was 8 or 9. And, I walked in, I was like, wow, buddy, you know, I didn't expect you'd be doing that. And he's like, well, you know, I woke up and I was kind of up and, I saw it needed to be done. So I went and did it. And I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you, you know, some cash for that. And so anytime they kind of go above and beyond is something that we want them to be rewarded because in work, typically the ones that, you know, work the hardest or come up with the ideas tend to be paid more. And so, we want to instill that in our children.
Yeah. I love that. That's good for you.
And you can never start too young. Like you say, I love that you instill this into them at an early age because the money becomes, I mean, it's an issue. It can be a struggle. I know the research that I did, Taylor Megan, is with newlyweds and it continues to be in the top three problem areas, whether it's debt brought into marriage or credit cards or secret accounts and things. And here at the Stronger Marriage Connection, we're about things that can create a connection, a stronger marriage connection. And money struggles and arguments over money are one of those things that can create a disconnection. So let me ask you this before I ask you the question that we ask all of our guests. Let me ask, there's going to be people listening right now. They're saying, man, we're kind of struggling in this area. Or maybe there's some financial infidelity or, you know, where do we start? Where would you recommend, you know, what are the next three steps for a couple that's struggling? What would you recommend them do?
Yeah. So one, our website is chock full of resources. So we're themoneycouple.com. We have the 5 money personalities assessment there. We have a financial infidelity assessment there as well, where you can answer 20 questions and it kind of gives you an idea of, hey, is there financial infidelity in our relationship and at what level? And we worked with a marriage family therapist to help develop those resources and answers that come off of that. So I would say one, you know, get educated, you know, there's no excuse nowadays with Google that you can get the answer to anything in the world. To be able to say you didn't know that, you know, these resources were available to you. You have them, right? We have them on our website. There's plenty of more out there. But definitely, you know, get educated. Number two, communicate, you know, talk with your spouse. This is a journey. We have a saying where everybody's on the same team, you know, or you're on the same team with your spouse. And so, pull them into it. You know, the ones that win the Super Bowl, the ones that win the World Series are teams that practice together. You know, they work hard together. Pull your spouse in there. And then, three, make it happen. Do it. You know, so often we say, oh, well, I don't have time or, you know, there's life got in the way. For us, we put it on the calendar. You know, we said, hey, you know, when we started getting serious about our finances, all right, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, we're meeting about finances and you know, we live and die by our calendars. A lot of us do in our professional world. That's where the important stuff goes. Put it on the calendar. I put things on my calendar, like write Megan a love note, you know, date night. I like make the finances a priority there as well. Stick it on the calendar and stick to it.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. My wife and I, we meet once a month. We go through our Quicken. We use Quicken. And go through and make sure we reconcile. One of us is reading it up, making sure everything matches right. up, and we know where we're at every month. And it's just that feeling again of safety. You know, I know where things are at.
And it builds a stronger marriage connection, if I could use the words that you know, a mentor of mine uses. But yeah, no, it builds a stronger marriage connection, even if one spouse isn't extremely comfortable with it or even really interested. And we see that a lot. Yes, but just keeping that connection, keeping that, hey, I want to be transparent with you on where our finances are and where we're heading, it just builds a stronger marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, let me ask you this then. We love to ask all of our guests what they feel like is the key to a stronger marriage connection. All kinds of things contribute to it. But in your mind, let me ask you, Taylor, and then Megan, what is the key to a stronger marriage connection?
Are you okay? I'm going to let Meg go first.
Oh,
is that
please.
All right?
Absolutely.
I want to hear her. I mean, she kicked off the very first question of me, so I'm going to kick this
one. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, let's hear it, Megan. All right.
I don't know if it's fair, but it definitely, I think it just goes back to communication. I mean, everything ties back to communication. Unmet expectations and just goals that aren't taking place. All of it goes back to lack of communication or unclear communication, or one spouse doing all of the communicating and the other spouse stonewalling and refusing to communicate. I mean, it all goes back to communication. And with that, I also say all the time, whenever I talk to my other young mom friends that are just starting out in parenthood or in marriage, I always say, you know, when you're working a job, you have to do continuing education credits. You know, you have to always continue your education. You always have to be making yourself better. And so many times in marriage, we think that we can just get married and just, that's it. Our lives are going to merge and everything's going to be wonderful. But we really need to be a steward and a student of our spouse. We need to study them. We need to learn more about them. And we also need to learn about marriage. And we need to have we need to have mentors in our lives that we can look up to. We look up to their marriages and people that are going to speak truth into our lives and not just always surround ourselves with the yes men. We need people that will challenge us and help us to see that maybe the things that we're doing in our marriage, we need to work on. We need to see that those are it's not going to turn out good if we continue down that road. So definitely communication, mentors, educate yourself. And what else do you think, Tyler?
That's great.
All right, what was the question again? I want to make sure I have this right.
In your mind, what is the key to a stronger marriage connection?
You know, I think for me, it's waking up every day and choosing to have a stronger marriage. And for me, you know, that takes a lot of things into consideration. I can wake up every day and decide what I'm going to make the day of. You know, I can decide if I'm going to have a bad attitude. I can decide if I'm going to take the trash out. I can decide if I'm going to, you know, do my part in this marriage. I can decide if I'm going to be a good dad. I'm going to be a good husband, or I can decide not to. But every day is a choice. And so you know, for us, it's every day we want to wake up and make the choice to be a servant to our spouse. Hey, you know, I want to be strong when you're weak and you're strong when I'm weak. You know, it's not this is 50-50. No, we're both giving 100%. And we see that a lot of, they're just not doing this. They're not doing that. Well, what are we doing, right? What are you doing? What are you bringing to the relationship? And what choices are you making day in, day out to be the spouse that you would want? And we live by that a lot, kind of like golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated. You know, if I want, you know, Meg to love me a certain way, I want to love her that way. And I want to show those decisions that I make every single day to help make a stronger marriage.
Yeah. Oh, well said, both of you. Thank you.
Excellent. The Money Couple. You two are, again, so generous with your resources. TheMoneyCouple.com. You have blogs to weekly newsletters to physical resources. Thank you for always creating new material, Taylor and Megan, to help us along the way and this purpose and intention to marriage. What's the best place for listeners to find you? Is that it?
Yeah. So themoneycouple.com is kind of the central hub. We have a marriage minute newsletter we send out every Thursday. We are starting to ramp up some things on social media to provide some real time feedback and information for couples. And I will end with this or one of my last things is we say a lot, comparison is the thief of joy. And for us, especially when you're looking at finances, it's really easy to always say, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. It's easier to say, oh, well, they have it better, or their parents were richer, or they went to this college, or, you know, .. But if you want joy in your marriage, you want peace in your marriage, maybe sometimes it's easier to let some things go. And maybe that means changing jobs. Maybe it means turning off social media. Maybe it means putting certain things away. But don't let comparison steal your joy. And we see that in finances so often. Well, you know, her husband bought her this ring for their anniversary or this purse, or they just went on this trip. Oh, okay. Like that's their team. That's not our team. So don't let comparison steal the joy out of your marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Well, and we'll put the resources and information and links and everything in our show notes. Hey, before we let you go, and you've been so generous with your time and the information that you've shared with us and our listeners. Let me ask you, what if you could have, you know, one piece of advice, and Taylor, you may have said it with the comparison as the theme of joy. But kind of what's your takeaway of the day? If there's one thing you want our listeners to know, each of you.
That no matter where you are, if you want it to get better, if you want your relationship to get better, your marriage, your parenting, your financial situation, whatever it is, if you want it to get better, it can get better.
And I'll say one of the things, the sayings we have on the website, or we did for a long time, was what's your marriage worth? You know, what is it worth? What's your marriage worth to you? Is it worth, you know, is it worth going to therapy? Is it worth going to a marriage retreat? Is it worth reading a book? Is it worth turning off ESPN or, you know, some other show in order to spend time with your spouse? What is your marriage worth to you? And live that way.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are great. I appreciate that. Great, great nuggets. Liz, what's your takeaway of the day?
Oh boy. I love the whole thing about comparisons and stealing the joy and grass is green on the other side. And then you get there and you realize it's AstroTurf, right?
Yeah.
It really is. Yep. In my neighbor's house, I love their home and I love them, but their grass is AstroTurf. So I always smile because I look at the neighbors. It's like, ah, that grass is so dang green. And it's kind of true. And I think in all of our life, we get there and it's like, ah, at the end of the day, I might just choose my own life, right? My own life.
Yep. Right.
And the grass that looks is all covered up with snow right now here in Utah. But I often think about worth too. And my question is a little bit different, but is it worth the loss of intimacy? If I do this thing, right? If I put this charge on this card, or if I go ahead and do this expenditure without my husband, is it going to be worth the hurt, the loss of intimacy? And usually the answer is no, it's not worth it.
Good.
Yeah, Dave, what about you? What's your takeaway, my friend?
Yeah, lots of good things. This is a great topic, a super important topic. I think that just because we have differences, there's going to be a lot of differences, doesn't mean that we can't make it work with our personalities. It's about understanding. It's about having compassion and simple awareness and trying to see things from our partner, our spouse's perspective, even if we disagree, trying to see from their perspective, kind of the why behind it. Because we each, you know, we each have these deep needs that we yearn to have met. And so trying to see things from a bigger perspective and really trying to understand what money means to each spouse or partner. So I think that's my takeaway of the day. Well, Taylor, Megan, the Money Couple, themoneycouple.com is where you can find them. We sure appreciate you, your time, and there are many resources that you have developed. We thank you again for coming on the Stronger Marriage Connection.
Thank you so much. We enjoyed it.
And remember, dear listeners, it's the small things that create a stronger marriage connection. See you next time.
Bye. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers, Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott, and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.